Min campus alihor, miai Karsten Schwine. Nilqakom għat-tieni program mit-tieni sensiela minn kampus għalieħor għal semmija regolari ta' dal-programm żgur drajtu li minn programm għalieħor niltaqa ma' xi ħadd mistieden mistiedna b'xi mod marbuta mad-dinja tal-universitajiet għalhekk li sam tal-programm minn kampus għalieħor li forsi huma letturi, professuri, akademiċi. B'karriera warajhom, però se jkunu wkoll riċerkaturi, nies li jaħdmu fil-maniġer ta' proġetti marbutin mad-dinja universitarja, u ġieli wkoll ikunu fil-barra għamilu hekk mill-ħitan tal-campuses stess, speċjalment fid-dinja diġitali u flessibilità llum, hemm ħafna nies ikollhom forsi ruoli differenti u anke attivitajiet differenti, b'xi mod però jiggravitaw għamilu hekk iduru. Madwar id-dinja tal-universitajiet. Il-programm li ħorre ta' huma nies differenti li anki huma forsi f'postijiet differenti, f'momenti differenti tal-karriri tagħhom, frott l-età, frott bidliet, frott interessi li jaddattaw skont ir-riċerka u ċ-ċirkostanzi ta' madwarhom. Il-persuna li għandi miegħi illum hija Louise Agod Hansen. Li hija professura assoċjata mill-Università ta' Aarhus ġewwa Danimarka, insir tingħata fit-tnejn u fit-tħejjiet tal-Kapitali Ewropea tal-Kultura hemmhekk u ġewwa l-Belt Valletta għal tul ta' snin, partikolarment mill-aspett tar-riċerka, l-evalwazzjoni u l-monitoraġġ fil-fatt niftakar numru tal-laqat kemm hemmhekk kemm Malta l-università il-campus tal-Belt stess. Fejn kienu skambji interessanti ħafna. Illum il-ġurnata Louise kif ser tisimgħu baqgħet tiżviluppa u baqgħet tiftaħ il-kamp ta' riċerka tagħha fid-dinja tal-immaniġjar ta' ngħidu hekk attivitajiet marbutin mal-kultura minn programma li ħar nissu ma' din-dinja kulturali u s-semmija tagħna jistgħu isegu kemm varjata din id-dinja, ċertu drabi nitilqu l-kultura persi biex nitlu anki fosma partikolari oħra. Illum ħankunu ftit fin-nofs ħajkek għaliex illum il-ġurnata Louise tagħmel ħafna xogħol fil-ċentru ta' riċerka u fil-dipartiment assoċjat mal-kompetenzi tagħha ġewwa l-Università ta' Aarhus. Qabel kif kont qed ngħid kienet mexxi l-riċerka fiċ-ċentru ta' evalwazzjoni kulturali propju mill-università, focus partikolari fuq il-tħejjiet u mbagħad it-twettiq tal-Kapitali Ewropea tal-Kultura hemmhekk fl-2017. Kienet għamlet numru ta' xogħol anke qabel dejjem fid-dinja ta' evalwazzjoni monitoraġġ u studji li ħarsu lej il-parteċipazzjoni u l-impatt ta' attivitajiet kulturali, speċjalment dawk tat-teatru fid-Danimarka, u kienet għamlet anki d-dottorat tagħha kif ħatajdilna istess marbut mad-dinja tat-teatru u anki il-postdoc tagħha li għamlet saħħa ta' scholarship fil-reġjun tal-ċentru ta' Danimarka. Qabel dak kif ħatajdilna istess għamlet anki esperjenza ġewwa l-Olanda u anki il-namra tagħha mad-dinja artistika kulturali ta' skambi soċjali fid-dinja kreattiva illa d-dejja u għandha anki passaġġ ħajdu hekk mid-dinja tal-lingwi skandinavi minn fej kienet studjat għall-ewwel digri tagħha l-baċċellerat propju fil-lingwi skandinavi u fil-letteratura. Qabel ma nibdew nisimgħu l-intervista ma' Louise Abel Hansen, professura assoċjata ġewwa l-Università ta' Aarhus fid-Danimarka, nerġa' nfakkarkom li l-mużika li takkumpanjana matul dawn il-programmi f'dawn is-sensijiet ta' minn campus għal ieħor hija dik tal-proġett Medinea, b'ħafna sħab Ewropej u Mediterrani illi huma b'xi mod ikkoordinati mill-ARC Research and Consultancy, però kif ġieli nsemmi bl-programm kif issibu d-dettalji anke fuq il-medja soċjali bil-appoġġ u bil-parteċipazzjoni ta' ħafna parteċipanti mużiċisti u anke amministrativi. So welcome back to the listeners of Min Campus Al Ieħor, with me, Karsten Schwerup, and my guest today, as you will have heard from my brief introduction in Maltese, is Louise Igod Hansen. Hi Louise, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Karsten.
It's really good to connect with you again after possibly a couple of years or more with the sort of pandemic hiatus in between. I remember meeting a couple of times in Denmark, possibly in Aarhus, on the occasion of the European Capital of Culture, which we'll be talking about a bit later, and within the context of campuses. So it's very fitting, very apt within the structure of this series. This is the second program of the second series on our own University of Malta radio station, where we try to connect, learn about the stories, about the career paths, about the developments, even the difficulties and the challenges that people like yourself, who maybe from the outside are perceived, and rightly so, correctly so, as having sort of progressed, possibly even in a linear way, from one career development to another. We try to go a little bit behind the scenes, look a little bit more at the building blocks of one's academic career and professional development, also looking sort of at the difficulties, the challenges that one comes across, because nothing comes easy, or very little comes easy, and especially when one is trying to build not only a career for oneself, but also contribute to one's own community, society of academics, of researchers, but also of practitioners, of professionals. Once again, in our discussion today, we'll be looking very much at the cultural sector, but not only, its repercussions even beyond. So, Louise, to start at the very beginning, which is a simple starting point, at least, if you sort of had to think a little bit about what possibly could have started you off on the path that, looking back today, you might see having developed in a series of stepping stones, what could that have been? What shaped you at the beginning?
Well, what probably shaped me was that I was very fond of reading as a child, like reading fiction, novels. I was reading so much more than I have ever done after I've grown up. Reading in the bed, too late, under the carpet or the blanket, so that my mom and dad wouldn't notice that I was still awake. So I guess that was where it started, and that was very much the love of reading and of good literature that after high school made me decide to go to the university and to study Scandinavian language and literature, which is also what you study in Denmark if you want to teach Danish in high school.
So somehow at an early age, I guess this is really music for the ears of those of our listeners who are firm believers, like ourselves, that reading is a pleasure, but so much more. It also really opens up one's imagination and doors and windows and trapdoors to so many other different worlds. Let me just go on a little bit on this, Louise, because it reminds me also of the phases my 11-year-old daughter, and I know you've got kids as well. Were there any particular stories, any type of narratives which particularly attracted you? I must say, maybe very stereotypically, when I think of Danish or Scandinavian literature, my mind goes into mythologies and fantasy worlds.
I guess I've read almost everything as a child, very omnivorous. One of the books I've read, or the book I read the most, was a very Scandinavian one, Astrid Lindgren's her novel, The Brother's Lionhood. I'm not sure that one is that known in English, but I was just so engaged in it, and I almost think I could recite it when I was 9.
Well, I wonder whether sort of that passion then also translated itself into your role as mother, bringing up your own kids. That tends to happen, sort of. Moving on, but somehow something else which tickled my curiosity there. So you did immediately connect sort of the Danish context to a Scandinavian one. So I wonder, from outside the Scandinavian world, sometimes I remember even attending meetings of the Nordic Council, for example, when I used to work in Brussels as culture attaché. I started realizing that maybe as other people lump much of the Mediterranean together, as if we're all the same. Somehow, the same seems to be done with regards to Scandinavia, with all the different realities and differences. But you yourself there sort of made a liaison, a link between one and the other. I don't want to focus too much on this topic because it might come up later. But was sort of living within a Scandinavian dimension got to do with any part of your own development in the field then of taking further studies down the line?
I'm not deliberately cast, I'm saying it, but we are going to talk about coincidences as well today. Well, I grew up at a time where also the national broadcasting system in Denmark insisted on having this Scandinavian or Nordic perspective. So when I saw children's TV from other Scandinavian countries, I couldn't as a child understand it. I can now, having grown up and studied Scandinavian languages. But back then it wasn't translated or dubbed. There was a narrator in Danish telling the storyline, and then we could listen to the voices in especially in Swedish. So it kind of was a part of the soundscape of my childhood to listen to that. And that has changed. So younger generations in Denmark have more difficulties in understanding Norwegian and Swedish.
Because somehow, although not a formal approach to language learning, I think possibly even listeners of our program today, Encompass at Home, Encompass FM, if they are, say, my age, early 40s, may relate to the way we picked up Italian from television directly, because we'd watch cartoons on, interestingly, sort of Japanese cartoons translated into Italian on free-to-air channels to Malta. And that way, somehow, even if you didn't understand everything, you grew sort of in a way sensitive to the fact that this culture existed and the language existed and its sounds existed. So that's interesting. And maybe now, ironically, in spite of more awareness and more formal efforts at trying to bring people together, these small informalities seem to have gone by the wayside. However, Louis, to come back to the way things seem to have developed in your case, I know that early on we spoke about this in preparing for the program, but even through a quick search online, as I encourage even our listeners to do, because there's material in Danish, but also material in English. You've also worked on language aspects. You've also worked on aspects of children and young people. And there's this theater dimension, which also comes up very much. How did the transitions happen also, quite coincidentally?
Yeah, very much. Well, I started Scandinavian language and literature for 2 years at university. And after 2 years, I had to choose another subject, expectedly a minor subject as well. And I was very much searching for something in addition to literature. And at that point, started also thinking, what do I want to work as when I graduate? I really didn't think about that when I started the university. But after 2 years, it was in my mind. And I decided not to become a high school teacher. That was the one thing I decided. And I wanted to do something with a more political perspective as well. Actually considering studying political science, but ended up at a strange, small, interdisciplinary study called Aesthetics and Culture. That was a collaboration between literature, art history, musicology, and dramaturgy. So it recruited students that had already studied for 2 years and then gathered us in an interdisciplinary classroom studying both, as it says, the aesthetics of different art forms, but also the culture and cultural policy surrounding the pieces of art. So that was very much a broadening of my perspective, and much by chance, because I thought I was going to continue with literature, but also then dive into another art form, and I thought it would be the visual arts, but there were a lot of students from art history in my class, and none from dramaturgy, so I thought, well, I might be interested in that. And then I was in a field study as a part of my master's. We had to go out and work in a cultural institution for a month. And again, by chance, I ended up at one of the most famous children's theatres in Denmark. That's also internationally recognized, Gruppe 38. And it was an amazing place to be. And I started learning also that Danish children's performances are of a really high artistic quality. They are known around the world, and they're really ambitious people that want to do great art for children. So that was both the theater part that I engaged with from there on, but also the part about what does arts and culture mean for children.
It's really interesting. The sort of map you're fleshing out has taken us sort of from books, sort of the very sort of first steps one engages with in the world of fiction. However, you're moving sort of to the real world, also sort of policy, politics, seeing the interrelation between the aesthetics, arts, but then also what happens in society at large, and then moving across a few media. But this very, as you said, multidisciplinary, transdisciplinary approach, including your stage, which possibly might ring a bell with some of our listeners, maybe especially the ones currently studying or maybe in between different subject areas, even at the University of Malta, there's the growing trend of trying to combine expertise and increasingly rub shoulders with colleagues outside one's specific area. And it's really great to see how somehow, maybe without specializing too much at an early age, one can flesh out and develop a particular, even world picture of how things can come together, the aesthetics with the political. And I don't want to jump the gun because we're still in this first part of our conversation, although we'll soon come to the end of it. Eventually other things come in too. So the finances, the economics of it, and other repercussions. Maybe as a last point in this early phase, Louise, I might ask you Sort of what then led you from the level where you were very much a student, including completing your master's studies, to then see what next, where else you would be going?
Well, an important step in that journey was that I took part in some short Erasmus exchanges with universities around Europe, working with arts management. I participated in two of those and met students from the other universities. And the one that was most similar to my own, which meant less business-like because some of them were really about business and finances, but the one that attracted me the most was arts and arts management and policy at the University of Groningen in the Netherlands. So I decided to go for a longer exchange there. So I went there just before I had to do my master thesis. And my master's thesis was a comparison between Dutch and Danish theater policy. So we have the theater, we have the cultural policy. And as a part of the stay in Groningen, I met Professor Hans van Manen, who was working with art sociology. And that was a start of a friendship that has lasted now for many years, because he was interested in my master thesis. And after that, he also contacted me because he was establishing a new research group called Project on European Theatre Systems. And he thought it would be nice if I'd come to the Netherlands to do a PhD. I didn't at that time. First of all, I didn't have plans to do a PhD. I really hated doing my master thesis. It was too much. So
what was the reason you said for that?
It was just such a long, lonely process where it took so long before I felt that I was producing something.
That's really interesting. You're saying that, almost admitting to it when you come across students. Parcells. I remember I took a long time to decide what I wanted to write about eventually. And I think it might be even a bit encouraging for students who might say, oh, okay, not all hope is lost if I really don't want to go down this road yet.
Yeah. So after that, I decided I'm not going to do a PhD. I'll do something else. So that was one reason why I shouldn't accept his invitation. The other one was that I just had my first child. And I didn't want to go to the Netherlands. That was too complex from a family perspective. So I thought about it and then ended up deciding that doing a PhD within an international research group would be different from doing a master thesis, that you actually, honestly, in most cases, write just for the teacher and the evaluator to read it, and then that's it. So the whole idea of having a research group that would be interested in what I would be doing was an important part in me saying, okay, I'll join you. I'll be happy to join you. And then I funded or applied for a scholarship in Aarhus instead, so that I could do my research from home.
That's really interesting, Louise. I think we don't get enough of those stories, even on this program, somehow, once we get talking about sort of career paths and development and the theory and the practice, so family still goes a little bit into the background. But having a child, trying to balance one's personal life with one's professional life is no secondary matter. And we talk about a lot about it, maybe in terms of measures and government measures and life balancing measures, but when it boil things down, I think in societies around the world you still find it's really hard. There are some tough decisions to be made, and one needs to play with time and see whether things need to happen now or later, and in what context. So I think that's also very refreshing, and even a bit sobering to hear that it doesn't just all come direct and easy. And the point you mentioned about the research group, what an interesting point to make about how collaborative research can be, and how one doesn't need to go it alone and sort of pursue some lone road. It happens, but it need not be so lonely. Louise, we're already more than a third of the way through in this conversation. I suggest we stop a little bit just to catch our breath, think a bit about what you told us, and travel around a little bit also, not only the professional aspects of Scandinavia, but also the soundscapes, and therefore also the music, which we also play during this program. Do you want to introduce the first of the two tracks will share with us today?
Let me do that. That's the Faroese singer-songwriter Ivar Palsdottir, that I've been listening to for quite a long time. I've been to concert with her before, and she was also part of the opening ceremony of Aarhus as European Capital of Culture in 2007. It's also an artist that I enjoy with my family, and actually me and my husband and my two girls are going to an Ivar concert on Sunday. So I thought it was perfect to choose that. It's a number called Silvitni in Faroese. It's called Surrender in English, and it's from the album Slur. That's actually she has both made an English and a Faroese version of it. So it's possible also to listen to the English text, but I thought it would be nice for the Maltese that are known to several minor languages to listen to Faroese for once.
That's fantastic. Let's listen to it. So my guest today, Louise Aigaard, from Denmark, University of Aarhus, has shared with us a really, really interesting piece of music there. Louise, I thank you very much, because you're right. Ourselves in Malta, for the Maltese speakers and listeners of this program, we don't see sort of Maltese as a minority language within the country. Obviously, it's our main language, but within a European and global perspective, yes, it's very much spoken by us, and that's yeah. It was interesting to hear that. Moving on from the first part, where we introduced a little bit your first early steps, but coming up very much to the present of your professional development and also hand in hand with your personal dimension. Could we somehow also talk about a little bit more of your recent work in the field of research? And I guess we can also start introducing your current position in the lead of the Center for Cultural Evaluation, Communication and Culture at Aarhus University. And I guess at some point, something we already hinted at, the Aarhus 2017 European Cup of Culture, and what role you had in that.
Yeah, you can say that Aarhus 2017 was a really important career step in a not very planned career, you could say. So if I'm going back to the PhD, I did my PhD, it was on the local theatres in Denmark, so professional theatres outside of the larger cities. I did that because I thought that would be an interesting contribution to the European context, because we have a really decentralized professional theatre structure in Denmark, and I was curious going into that. But I didn't do it because someone from practice wanted me to do it. I did it purely out of academic curiosity. But that led to my postdoc position after I did my PhD, where I, in 3 years, was doing a postdoc on regional theatre development together with all the theatres, professional theatres in the Central Denmark region. They have this ambitious and somewhat crazy idea that I could do research for 3 years in a way that they could use. So I tried to figure out how to do that. And a part of that was that I had an office, not just at the university, but also at a theater with the coordinator of the network. Mm-hmm. So we were very much in dialogue. They knew that they wanted to do something about audience development.
Okay.
It was a really new term in Denmark at that point. So I started up by making a report in Danish, said, what is audience development? Which partly because of the timing, partly because of the title, became a reference point when talking about audience development in Denmark. Mm-hmm. So I did that for 3 years and really enjoyed the exchange between theory and practice. Mm-hmm. It's extremely challenging. It's something you as an academic need to practice to find out how to do it. But you also need to build a strong relationship with the practitioners for them to take up your ideas and your results, etc. So that was really a good learning experience. And I made contact with the theatres that I kept since. So I was also building a network.
Yes.
Yeah. And after that, after those 3 years, Aarhus had won the title as European Capital of Culture. I didn't have a contract. So I was looking for something, perhaps in practice, perhaps at the university.
You still had some of your options quite open. So the disadvantage maybe of having really built a particular road meant you had many paths around which could flourish, which could develop.
Yeah. And then, much by chance, I was invited to a meeting at the university about the evaluation of Aarhus 2017 that was going to be conducted by the university. That was a part of the application, so that the university had committed itself to doing it, but hadn't really established an organization, haven't really dedicated persons to do so haven't designed the evaluation. Mm-hmm. And there I came without a permanent position and knowing about culture policy and about the link between research and practice. So I was appointed project manager of that evaluation program, which again was perhaps far too ambitious for me at that stage because there were a lot of things I didn't know. Mm-hmm. But we built up a small team, me and my colleague Hans-Peter Dein, who was along all through the project that lasted for 5 years, actually. And then with research assistants, et cetera, we developed the evaluation, both designed it, gathered the data, and of course, analyzed and published it. So mm-hmm. that was a huge project that I've learned quite a lot from.
A huge undertaking, and somehow from what you said in this second part of our program today, in Campus Alihor, I'm talking to Louise Igod Hansen from the University of Aarhus. So there's at least for me three main points. So there's this focus not only on, say, the centralizing patterns in, say, theaters or any other cultural practice and discipline, because of you're looking at the decentralization and the map of many dots around the regions of Denmark, and keeping that in mind with the drive, even the pioneering work in Denmark on audience development, as you said, what did it mean? What are we saying when we're saying we're developing audiences? I guess together, maybe partly inadvertently, partly as building blocks, it really helped come up with a good, strong, solid framework. Although maybe feeling at the beginning, as you honestly, candidly admitted, not knowing, realizing that you don't know enough, at least sort of made your toolbox rich and diverse and flexible enough to start adapting. Because just not to go on too long myself, because I'd like to hear more from you. But I remember at the very end, you and your colleagues giving a presentation at the UNEC, at the Union of Capitals of Culture Universities here in Valletta, in the same building I'm actually sitting now at the Valletta campus, where you sort of gave a really good summary and rendition of what worked, what didn't work, what could have worked, what exceeded expectations. So it was a very, sort of again, candid, all-round evaluation, warts and all, of what possibly the Capital of Culture project in Aarhus did deliver on the ground, and maybe even with an eye to the future, where else it could go. So that's something which definitely stayed with me, on how a good, solid, thorough evaluation process can really help evaluate, but also map out future steps.
Well, thank you for the kind words. I think part of what we succeeded with was, first of all, that we had plenty of time, that it was a 5-year program, that at least for the first year, we could study how other capitals of culture had done it, reading some of the literature on evaluating, etc. And then a good match in the team between me and Peter, me knowing about arts and cultural policy, a lot about a qualitative method, and hence Peter being specialized in quantitative methods and also in evaluation theory. So again, the team effort of it was quite important in slowly developing and slowly learning how we thought it should be done. So that's, it was really, in that way, it was also tough work, because European capitals of culture also attract a lot of attention and have a high level of expectation, etc. So navigating in that landscape also with a lot of stakeholders was also challenging. And it's good that it was 5 years and not longer than that.
Yes. I remember, I think the first time we met was actually in a very lively pub in Aarhus. Sort of underground, semi-underground place. And at the time before, probably you were halfway through the process, you were already sort of mentioning a number of challenges being faced. But I remember you mentioning one thing which you found to be sort of a strong arrow in your ammunition, so to speak, which was sort of the possibility that within the university structure there was an element of independence and an element of what we could call sort of an arm's length distance from the direct influences, not necessarily sort of evil-oriented, but almost automatic, that if one is building something to succeed, then you want positive feedback and positive results. And I guess you had already identified the advantage of having that safety distance between the direct producers and who was carrying out the evaluation monitoring. I wonder whether you could share your views now, a few years later, on how important it is to somehow safeguard the independence of a real independent body of research and evaluation.
Yeah, well, I think you're right that university is a strong position to claim independence from, because while we had to deliver an evaluation report to practice, to policymakers, to all the stakeholders, we also had to deliver an evaluation report that could be peer reviewed from colleagues that I could continue my academic career based on as well. So there is this platform for doing more independent, in some ways also more balanced evaluations. Mm-hmm. And that is, of course, tricky, not just in terms of evaluating European capitalist culture, but everywhere, that a lot of, especially smaller cultural institutions, cultural projects, have this demand to keep on fundraising for new projects, new activities. And of course, they would prefer an evaluation report saying you're the best in the world, continue to do what you're doing. and no offense, but consultancy firms are better at delivering that kind of evaluations. Mm-hmm. Which is fine. It's another way of engaging with an evaluation process. So that's what we continued also after August 2017 to have Center for Cultural Evaluation to engage in evaluation processes that are less about just telling the success story, but also addressing the challenges. Mm-hmm. And we frame that by saying the purpose of our evaluation is not just to control whether the money was well spent, but also to create learning. So yeah, it's a slightly different purpose of evaluation. And if you have that purpose, you also need to talk about what was difficult, because that's where you learn the most, and that's where others can also start reflecting in the challenges you've met in your project when they are doing their own project. Yeah. So I think where we are now, we are very clear on setting that frame, and that's a learning from the August 2017 process that we can build on now, which is really good. And of course, our cultural institutions, when we say that this is our approach, saying no, we want something else, and that's fine. But we have really good relationships to the projects, to the cultural institutions where we engage in evaluation processes. Mm-hmm. And not just making the final report saying you should have done this different, but also being a part of the process, presenting results in the mid of the project period, mm-hmm. saying we can see that audiences react in this way, or we can see when we do interviews with the stakeholders that they are really fond of that, but you should perhaps focus a bit more on this and that. So it's a different approach, and one that I find honestly also more purposeful than just the final report that is put on the shelf to collect dust, because that's sometimes what happens.
Yes, somehow sort of fulfilling this function, ticking the box, but having a very short afterlife. so to speak. Louise, we're down to the last 10 minutes already of our very enlightening conversation today, I must say. Let's listen to the second of the two tracks that you very, very kindly decided to share with us today. Can you tell us something about this as well before we listen to it?
Yeah, I can. It's by the Danish artist Åland. That and it's actually from a performance made in as a part of August 2017. It was made in Randers by the theater in Randers, and the performance was called Water Music. It was at the harbor in Randers, a very big, spectacular performance. And Åland is a quite well-known Danish artist that performed there and composed all the music. And this one, which is quite a theater performance kind of music, but still nice to listen to in itself, is called Just Now or Kun for Nu. And the thing was that Randers Egnsteater that produced this performance was where I had my office during the postdoc. Mm. It was a theater and the persons there I know very well and I'm very fond of.
So beautiful, sort of the music, the soundscape taking us back to the actual event. Let's listen to this. So that was really, really, I would say, transporting, taking us back, Aarhus 2017, European Cup of Culture. Today, my guest on the program in Campus Alihor is Louise Igot Hansen from the University of Aarhus. And in these concluding minutes, Louise, maybe we can somehow try to look a little bit ahead. And I would say, as part of this learning from learning process, which is really coming through, I feel very, very clearly. Not wanting to jump the gun and sort of preset things too much, but actually being very much in the present, building on successes, failures, and then rethinking, almost reevaluating the process of evaluation itself. And therefore coming up with very sort of valid, practical, pertinent recommendations and in a way roadmaps for where further research can go and what policymakers and managers could act upon. I wonder if one adopts that approach, if you could somehow share with us where you see current and maybe research in the immediate future. Obviously, no fortune telling involved. Although, again, my Scandinavian imagination takes me there. But in a more practical way, where is your possible future research taking you? Your colleagues, your peers, even your own students. What seem to be the next steps and the main concerns?
Yeah. Now you mentioned students. One of the things that I enjoyed finalizing the evaluation of August 2017 was going back to teaching. I teach cultural policy and arts management and have now spent 3 years developing these courses. And I'm really pleased with doing that and really pleased with being able to teach in a way that is, of course, academic and theoretical, but also linked very much to practice. So that I also build on my whole network from the Arts 2017 project. So that has very much been one of my commitments afterwards. Mm-hmm. When we talk about research, there are still lots of academic research to be done on August 2017, both on data and results, but also on the method and the approach. And that's, again, a way of reflecting on what was it that we did in a more academic, systematic way. Then I've been able to return to some of the starting points, I think. I contributed to a book on children's culture in Denmark, the history of that the last 50 years. Last year, where I wrote about theater for children. So that was diving into an area that I've been following for many years. And I'm just starting, actually, together with a research assistant and with my students, to do a follow-up study on the local theatres in Denmark, because mm-hmm. it's more than 10 years ago, a lot of things have developed, also in the way that the municipalities and the local theatres collaborate, and I'm going to dive into that in the next year to see how much have changed. And that's really a privilege, because those long-term studies can actually be really difficult to fund and to get the means to conduct them. And now I'm not doing it for my own academic interest. I'm doing it in collaboration with the theatres that have agreed with me that they wanted to make that analysis as well.
Mm-hmm. In fact, that's one point which we didn't have enough time to go into, sort of the source of funding of particular research. Last week in the program with Jordi Balta, we went a little bit into sort of commissioning research, keeping it independent, keeping it relevant, rather than, as we mentioned, a little bit ourselves being sort of predetermined to highlight certain aspects, not others. But in your case, I guess this strength, which comes through collaboration with institutions, with partners in the sector, then in a way needs to be balanced with the sort of detachment one needs in order to come up with a scientific approach. Yeah, Luis, as a very last comment, because we're down to the last couple of minutes, is it possible to have to open the angle slightly and see whether your work currently in the various areas of theatre and cultural practice in Denmark finds an echo, chimes in with other campuses, also recalling the name of this program, around Europe or elsewhere around the world? Is there sort of a current wider trend which is looking at this type of evaluation and impact assessment?
I think there is, yes. And I have, especially with interest, followed a project in Leeds and Edinburgh by two colleagues, David Stevenson and Leila Jankovic. That's actually about failure and failed projects and about exactly addressing this question of how do we talk about failure. They are especially interested in participatory art projects. And a lot of research has documented that it's extremely difficult to success if you're trying to reach out to groups that are very foreign for or not very used to engaging with art. And those challenges are pushed away if you cannot talk about failure and cannot talk about learning from failure. So that's a really interesting project that I've followed. And I think there are, after the impact debate and the interest in impact and value of arts and culture has been developing throughout the globe for years now. And I think we are at a time now where most people have now recognized that we need a much more nuanced approach to understanding it. It cannot just be metrics, and we cannot just measure audience satisfaction or economic return on investment. So this approach where you both are critical towards too simplistic approaches, but also engage in alternative ways of understanding it. That's very much a movement that I see myself as a part of.
So it's great, Louise. I think those words of capture the also larger, wide-angled approach and practicality and way how policy and research go very well together if one sort of envisages over the long term. I think that was a key perspective you gave us, the development of tools which are not, say, quantitative only or sort of looking almost at people as customers and consumers in the short term, but looking at the long-term development. So, Louise, thank you very much for being with me today and sharing your views with all of us.
Thank you for an interesting conversation, Carsten. Good to see you again.
Thanks and bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Nittama li dik il-intervista ma' Louise Agold Hansen, professura assoċjata ġo l-Università ta' Aarhus id-Denimarka. Uġbitkom, tafkom forsi fi perspektiva oħra fuq ix taħsbu għand kien fejn tarblu din id-dinja attiva tal-politika kulturali, aspetti ta' riċerka, ta' koordinazzjoni anke ta' timijiet li huma voluti minn it-tip ta' attività. U jekku minnu nistedinkom tisimaw il-programmi kolla minn l-ewwel sensiela u anke minn din it-tinsensiela għalkemm għadna fil-bidu tagħha fuq is-sit ta' Campus FM fejn il-podcasts kollha u fl-istess ħin anke tibqgħu seguna matul ix-xandiriet fuq Campus FM.